Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
Hey, everybody. Sunny Bunch here. Just wanted to give you a quick heads up. Special episode this week. It's a two-parter. First up is an interview with Ted Hope, indie producer extraordinaire, leader of the Film Stack movement on Substack. And then after him, I talked to a couple folks from the Future Film Coalition, John Reese and Jax DeLuca. Basically, we're all discussing this week the big letter signed by Hollywood creatives. Big names, guys like Damon Lindelof, who I talked to over at the Bulwark Takes feed. You can see a video of us talking on the YouTube and at the Bulwark.com about this letter that was signed in the hopes of stopping the merger between Warner Brothers and Paramount. It's the big issue of the day. There's lots of stuff going on. There's big moves happening. There's lots of talk about it out at CinemaCon. I wanted to get some folks on who were involved in signing and putting together this letter to come get together and talk about it and educate folks about what can be done to stop it if you think it needs to be stopped and why, frankly, it should be stopped. And look, I have my own personal thoughts on this, but the thing I am worried about and the thing I think most folks are worried about is further consolidation in the film industry, the reduction, the loss of another major studio. Now, David Ellison is out at CinemaCon. He says, hey, we're still going to do 30 movies a year between Warner Brothers and Paramount. If you believe him, great. But they don't put out that many movies now. So, this all seems a little bit ridiculous. Anyway, I talked to Ted, I talked to John and Jax, I hope you learn something and maybe come up with some ideas on how you can help try to stop this thing. Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark. And I'm very pleased to be joined today by Ted Hope, who is one of the leaders of the Film Stack community, the kind of burgeoning film scene on Substack, which is great. I'm a very small part of it, just a little bit off to myself. But this is a very important moment that we're going to be discussing here. Ted, thanks for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Really glad to be here, Sonny. Thank you.
So I should just introduce you to folks as beyond being a guy on Substack. Ted Hope is one of the like premier independent film producers of the 1990s, what we might think of as kind of the Sundance era. I could just run through his filmography, the movies he has executive producer, associate producer, whatever credits on, things like The Brothers McMullen, She's the One, The Ice Storm, Happiness, The Tao of Steve, which is going to sound weird and lame maybe, but The Tao of Steve, one of my, one of the great HBO classics. Like I watched that about 50 times one summer because it would just come on in bits and pieces. But he's been around for a long time. You were at Amazon Studios, which is important. I'll get to why that's important in a second, but the right at the initiation of that studio. And now we have entered this kind of post indie, space. You have a term for it. I'll let you define what the non-indie, film movement is. We are here today for a very specific reason. And that is there's a letter out now signed by first 1,000, now 2,000, I think even more than that now, folks in the film industry who are opposed to the attempted merger of Warner Brothers and Paramount. It's a big deal because this sort of thing is generally avoided by people who are looking to maintain their relationships in the film industry. Ted, what is going on right now? Why are you on with me?
Well, first I should add that I think about an hour ago we hit the 3,000 signature mark. So that's 1,000 film people a day signing this letter, which is really quite. When Warner's went up for sale, Netflix, and Paramount amongst others all started bidding for it. I got very, very nervous. And it comes about both because of my business and what I've enjoyed, and frankly, my place as a citizen in America, right? And my firm belief in democracy, of all things. Go figure. When I started in the 80s making movies, when independent producing really took off in the 90s, when I took on a project, I knew I could get it made. That sounds a little arrogant. I get it. But I had really 1,000 pathways. Financer after financer, distributor after distributor, sales company after sales company, territorial buyer after territorial buyer. In each of the different countries, some would license the rights. And within those countries, there was also a whole series of media rights that you would could license. There were so many paths to success. You remember that phrase, I'm big in Japan. Right. You know, like when people say like that, it's what it really meant. It means my film might have been a dog here in America, but it really sold well there. Right. And there were so many movies that maybe didn't perform well at the box office, but were so huge on home video, on physical media, that they got sequels, films that were saved in so many different ways. That started to winnow for many different reasons, but first and foremost, because of media consolidation. And we've reached a place as studio after studio, distributor after distributor shuts down, that we're now down to the potentially only having 4 major studios. By no means is the Paramount merger with Warner Brothers Discovery a done deal or a done steal. You know, that it can be stopped. We just saw it today. You know, you probably read about the Ticketmaster being called Monopoly. That, you know, and that was done by the state attorney general, who are going to be leading this fight to stop the Paramount merger. And that speaks volumes, because people said that that couldn't be stopped, you know, and yet here we are seeing the state attorney generals be successful there. So I watched the type of movies that I love, that I've dedicated my life to. I make movies for grownups. You can't really call them adult films. People get confused, right? You know, I make movies for audiences that want to have the potential of having their life changed by what they see. I know that sounds grandiose, but that's happened to me so many times. You know, the deepening of my humanity, of my experience, because of what I witnessed. And those movies are what have been lost most in the consolidation. Well, I shouldn't say most, because we're losing that, and films, nonfiction films in particular right now, that dare to speak truth to power. Forget about the political direction they go in. Anything that is controversial now is no longer being acquired. You can't get traction, right? Right wing, left wing, whatever. And there's a variety of reasons for that. I had much different hopes for what the global streaming platforms could become. I drank the Kool-Aid. I loved being at Amazon. And I thought the potential of access to anything at any time, you know, the unlimited real estate that digital represented, was going to help usher in a new golden era. And for a minute, you know, the time that I and Roy Price, who was my boss there, and I think you've had on your show, were there, we really got to do some bold swings, and perhaps we did it too well. We weren't supposed to win an Oscar, let alone 3 of them in our first year, right? You know, and we were supposed to have a little bit more runway. And but it really did work. People weren't making those types of films, and we could amplify them in a different way. And audiences loved them, and they were successful. But it is a lot of work to produce for excellence. If you're manufacturing your own content, it's labor intensive to get things right. And ultimately, you can't staff for that type of programming. you can't hire the people in all the departments that are needed to push that out. So as the success of the platforms grow, as you get 100 million, 200 million, 300 million, they also start to change what they're looking for. They need films like He-Man, Masters of the Universe, that they believe 300 million people across the globe will want to stream. You can't do Manchester by the Sea or The Big Sick or, you know, for Hardy's The Salesman, which won Oscars, or The Sound of Metal, or, yeah, you know, movies like what we were doing. And I was told that very directly when, you know, Amazon was always very kind to me. So even after I left, they gave me a generous overhead deal. But when it wasn't renewed after 3 years and a couple movies that I had produced, they said, you realize, of course, we can't make these types of films anymore, right? They don't appeal to a wide enough audience. And you have to recognize that all of these companies like Apple and Disney aren't just in the movie business. They have businesses across many different enterprises, and they can't afford in their mind to jeopardize not getting into new markets like China, right? Mm-hmm. So they're not going to do anything. Apple manufactures their phones in China. They're not going to do anything that is going to interfere with that.
Right.
And yet all of the distributors, because what these companies did, what the let's call them the FANG companies, the Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, Google, so on, did, they used their capital as a competitive advantage. Right. For that period of time of about 2014 to 2020, documentary films were all of a sudden selling for $5 and $10 million. Right. Everything. It seemed like the rules changed until they changed them to something even worse. But that process of, call it predatory pricing, pushed all of those smaller companies out of the business. Right. Physical media died. Right. There was no way to protect the investment of production other than the pay one windows. So even the companies that pay one being the first pay window where the film is acquired for license, whether that's broadcast or streaming.
Right.
That even small companies like Neon, you know, companies like A24, they depend on that pay one license to make a predictable return on their investment of production. What happens as the marketplace shrinks, as the number of competitors get much smaller, there's a level of self-censorship that goes on. We know they're not buying political movies. So a lot of people say, like, we won't make a political film. But let's not forget that a film like Fahrenheit 9/11 made over $100 million at the box office. Mm-hmm. The audiences are always there. And there are many films on the opposite side of the political spectrum, too, that have done very well, you know, $10 million plus on that. It's not a business decision, right? It's a business decision that's not directly related to the content so much. You don't want to interfere with Russia. Netflix, you know, won their first Oscar for Icarus, right? For the anti-Russian drug doping movie. I've seen the sequel. I will say it's much better than the first film that won the Oscar, right? But did Netflix license that film? No, because they're in Russia, right? Yeah. They're doing business in Russia. You know, that you start to see a level of self-censorship enter the picture. And from a film point of view, right, that diminishes what the conversation is that the customers can reach, right? It's even much more dangerous when you start to go into questions of the news, right? So we've seen what the Ellisons have already done to CBS, changing that trajectory. We've seen how Pete Hegseth, you know, is begging the Ellisons to move faster and take over Warner's so they can take over CNN, right? Mm-hmm. The deliberate attempt. This is right out of Orban's playbook, right? This is an authoritarian attempt to limit what the public gets to see and hear. It's an authoritarian attempt to try to limit the opinions that we have and that we have access to, right?
Well, just to emphasize this point, on the flip side, you said the people are avoiding the more political, you know, titles mm-hmm. entirely. But then you have like Amazon Studios picking up Melania, which was, you know, they spent way too much on it and it didn't do very well. And it just seems very obviously like a sop to the administration.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to please call it what it is. It's a bribe. It's a payout. Right. Same sort of thing as like the lawsuits that also got settled. Right. It's a pay to play game that they've rigged. There's a direct relationship to our culture, to the content that we are able to create, to media, free expression, freedom of the press, and democracy, right? It's not that, you know, you watch any authoritarian power rise, they cut spending for the arts. And it's not because they're uncultured slobs, right? It's because they know this is the hearts and minds of people. And they want to control them. And we already are seeing this with this administration. And we've seen, you know, how different papers, let's say the Washington Post, also owned by Jeff Bezos, and the LA Times have changed their editorial policy in order to curry favor, right? This is all very closely connected. And you know, ultimately, you know, like just feeling it firsthand, it's why I was, you know, first compelled. I'm not even sure when it was, like a month ago, to write a letter about how I personally have been affected over the years by media consolidation. And this is what I love. It's what I dedicate my life to. You know, I have wide-ranging tastes, but I'm not going to make things that I don't care about or don't believe in. And I never have. Okay. I have to admit, once, twice, maybe three times, I did something for the money, you know, but they were not exactly, you know, it was one for them. I did fall prey to that. But but after doing that initial letter, I thought that by stepping forward and doing that, I could get other producers, other directors, other actors to do the same. And I know a lot of people. And I reached out to about 30, I would say, who I know would be inclined to write such letters. None of them wrote such letters. And I was able to start to meet some super smart people, you know, in the, you know, anti-monopoly, anti-media consolidation, you know, democracy-oriented realm. And in discussion, it became clear we needed something that people could sign on to and see other leadership that was willing to step forward. I get it. People have to earn a living. People fear retaliation. We've had the blacklist in this country, right? You see what already happened with Paramount, who, you know, the Ellisons pledged to be creative friendly and, you know, warm, gentle, and cuddly. But what happens when, you know, another media publication speaks out against a merger? They pull all their advertising from the Ankler because Richard Rushfield dared to wear a block the merger button at Cinecom. Cruel, right? It's hard. Hopefully everyone subscribes and makes up for it. But that question, you know, of how do you get people to start to sign on when they know their jobs are at stake, already in a world where we've lost so many jobs, I understand it's hard. But frankly, like, I actually am so thrilled at what this huge public response has been to signing that letter, that once we broke with a very strong initial 1,000, the fact that thousands are signing out, stars, people with deals at Paramount, Damon Lindenhoff, right, who had, you know, has had a job, had a deal at Paramount for, I think, something like 15 years. Yeah. He realized it was the right thing to do. Denis Villeneuve, you know, who, you know, is so in deep with Warners, he knew it was the right thing to do. Time and time again, people recognize that staying silent is not going to protect their job, right? That's actually, you know, how, quote, they take over. How the monopolists, the oligarchs, you know, the brawligots, garks, the big tech overlords win. We don't want movies to be just used as the bait to bring people into walled gardens of commerce that we can never leave. And it's starting to feel like that's what the strategy is.
Well, I mean, look, I think there's so many avenues here to explore. But one of them that you mentioned, this kind of walled garden concept, this idea of bringing everybody into an individual ecosystem, more or less, right? Where you have like, you have stuff on Netflix, you got stuff on Disney, you got stuff on HBO Max, or maybe HBO Max Plus, Paramount Plus, you know, whatever that is going to look like, which reduces the number of places, A, where you can sell to, but also just B, where things are available. And this is all concurrent with something you mentioned two or three times already, which is the death of physical media. And this is a hobby horse of mine. Death of physical media is a total hobby horse of mine. This is a thing I talk about a lot. But I want people to understand what it meant to have that revenue source in the late 90s and early aughts as the DVD boom kicked off in particular, and what it meant for that to go away and to kind of just all be subsumed into streaming. As an independent producer, what did that mean to you to have that kind of revenue source to fall back on?
It gave people confidence in the type of films that I made, right? That all business enterprise favors some form of predictable outcome, right? That they have to say that we believe that with our knowledge, we will be able to get a return of X, right? And they do that full waterfall through each step of media and what they believe it was worth. You generally were making, you know, something close to what you made at the box office, if not more, for specialized cinema with physical media, right? That these, you know, whatever you want to call the movies that end up at the Oscars, right? Whether that's prestige cinema or indie or art house, smart house, movies for grown-ups, that they were the type of films that people wanted to have in their library, right? That going to see a critically acclaimed film is a badge of honor for a lot of people. It speaks of your taste. And they were proud to have these movies on their bookshelf, right? I still have, hundreds of DVDs that I haven't opened, right? That I bought.
No comment.
Because I love,
no comment.
Right? I love the movies, or I knew I would love them and I wanted to see them. I saw last year the John Hillcoat film Proposition, right, on the big screen. I owned the DVD for 15 years. I have a special binder of the films I most want to watch of my DVDs, right? And I had it there without knowing I had it because I so much wanted to see it on the big screen based on what I had learned. And I was completely satisfied. I loved the experience. But that desire, you know, okay, I'm a movie obsessed nut. I admit that, right? I already identified all the movies I want to see, you know, for the rest of my life, you know, and yet somehow I skip over some of them. But, That whether it was a nostalgia factor, something that you loved, or something that you looked forward to have, there was a connection to that ownership and frankly how you felt about yourself. We like to be surrounded by beautiful things. You know, that was one of the pleasures of DVDs, plus the fact that you could then share it with your family and friends along the way. Streaming promised that we would have access to everything, but you know, any film nut knows that that is profoundly not true. It's actually become harder and harder to find it. So it was the backbone. Physical media was the backbone in the economic equation for prestige cinema.
Yeah, no, it's so interesting to talk to people who came through this era. I was on the other side of it, of course. I was buying all these and putting them on my shelf, and not always
Thank
watching
you.
All of them in short order. You know, boy, there's so much more we could discuss here. But I always like to close these interviews by asking if there's anything I should have asked. Like, what's a quick thing people should know that can be done to possibly slow this thing down or to stop it? What do you hope to accomplish with this letter?
Well, first and foremost, we wanted to thank the attorney generals who are fighting this fight, and to make sure that everyone knew that the industry itself was behind them, because it was hard to hear that without it, right? And now we know very much the top stars, top directors, top producers, top writers, you know, stand behind them. It's important to recognize that in all industries, but particularly in the film business, the history of consolidation leads to less consumer choice, less narrowing of the perspectives of the stories that are told, and a complete loss of jobs, right? That David Ellison promised, you know, that when he, you know, if he succeeded, he'd be making 30 films a year. Just like, you know, Zaz had promised they would be making 20 films a year when Discovery and Warner's merged. Just like it was promised that when Disney and Fox merged, they'd be making 40. All of that are lies, right? You know, period. It's important to recognize that if this merger happens, it is one of the largest, and it's one of the largest ever financed with debt. When you have debt, you can't take risks, right? Art, creativity, and good business requires you to take some significant risks. With $79 billion of debt, they won't be taking any risks if this merger is not blocked by the state attorney generals, right? And the net result of all that is the customers will see less movies, they'll have to pay higher prices, job loss will go down, and there'll be a less variety of types of films that are available. It is also, again, part of the authoritarian's playbook of how they democracy ends, right? Control of the media. The Ellisons have made it already very, very clear. It's been stated what they want to do. They have to take over CNN fast because they don't like the truth that is being reported by CNN, right? Democracy will get one step darker than it was before. And it's up to the public to also speak up now. You know, that everyone should be calling the state attorney generals and say, I don't want this to happen, right? There are tools we all can use to just make 5 calls a day. You know, that's super helpful to stand up and say, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
That's well, a movie a film quote that would not be made those today, yeah, probably, you know?
Yeah, exactly. About media.
Yeah. Ted, thank you so much for being on today. I really appreciate it. Everybody should go to his Substack, tedhope.substack.com. And if you found some of this history interesting, check out his book, Hope for Film, which is a kind of look back through that wild west of the indie period. But Ted, thanks for being on today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot for having me, Sonny. I really appreciate it, too.
Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
And I'm very pleased to be joined today by John Reese and Jax DeLuca of the Future Film Coalition. John is the board chair. Jax is the executive director, interim executive director. The titles, who needs them? But I'm excited to have John and Jax on today to talk about a couple things. One, we're going to be discussing the letter that a bunch of Hollywood folks were, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. The number keeps going up. It's like the ticker at the telethon. It just keeps going up. It's great. Folks who have signed this letter opposing the Warner Brothers Paramount merger. And I also want to talk about independent film in an age of consolidation. We'll get into this in a second here. But John and Jax, thanks for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. It's great to be here.
Thanks, Sonny. We're so excited to be here.
All right. John, let's start with you. You've been in this kind of independent film space a long time. When people hear, oh, consolidation of the major studios, you know, Paramount, Warner Brothers, whatever, you know, that's not independent film. That's the mainstream films. That's the big, you know, blockbusters and stuff. That doesn't really have anything to do with independent film. And that couldn't possibly be more wrong, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, independent film is still somewhat, or has been, dependent on what are called ancillary income streams. So for a while, you know, when theatrical became more of a, in general, loss leader marketing, there was VHS sales, then there were DVD sales that kind of created income. When those went away because of cable and then streaming, that those income streams, the independent world and the finance of the independent world became dependent on money from streamers who would acquire those independent films. And that happened. There was this golden age of streaming that was about, I don't know, in like 10 years ago till about 3 to 4 years ago. And when the streamers decided to, you know, create their own content, and that was also because of their media power and their consolidation, that started hurting the independent film sector, because the independent film sector still needs other sources of income, more, you know, I would say large scale support that they were getting from the purchases. So for instance, places such as Magnolia would have output deals to Hulu for their content. And as those deals started going away, it made it more difficult for companies or smaller distributors like that who are supporting of the independent film scene to provide revenue for independent filmmakers.
Yeah. So I like to kind of break it down for folks, you know, one of the major sources of revenue for Sony, which is not a minor film studio, Sony Columbia, big film studio, but one of their major sources of revenue is their pay one deal with Netflix, right? Like they make tons of money that way. A24 has a deal with, I believe, HBO Max and Warner's right now, right? They put their, that's where their first run A24 films go. But for the smaller independent producers, this was like a real genuine revenue stream, right? Like this was a good way to make money and to ensure that you could continue making these films.
Yes, exactly. And so now, as that market has shrunk and revenue from distribution has shrunk accordingly, it makes investors more wary of investing in films, and that dries up money for creating independent film.
Jax, I want to talk to you about this letter, because it's a big deal. This is why I reached out to you guys in the first place, through mutual friend Richard Rushfield, friend of the pod. He's embroiled in a fight with Paramount right now over all of this. They pulled their funding. They pulled their advertising funding from The Ankler, and they said, no more for you. You're too opposed to this deal. And I think that hits on a key idea, something I talked about with Damon Lindelof earlier this week, something I talked about with Ted Hope, which is fear. There is fear in the industry at the power that these companies have, and there's fear about speaking up against them. When you and everybody else who was involved with starting to get this letter written, how did you kind of counter that fear of being blackballed, being blacklisted, losing revenue, losing jobs? What were people saying to you when you came to them and say, hey, sign this letter?
That's a great question. And I think also one of the core reasons why Future Film Coalition exists is that notion of having independent voices coming together for collective power. And we know that there's power in numbers. We actually started the Block the Merger campaign back in January. We launched it at Sundance. And this was one of those things where it felt at the time maybe more of like a pipe dream, right? Because we knew how afraid people would be to sign on as a supporter for Block the Merger, because we know how vindictive these players are in the industry. But at the end of the day, really, These aren't political statements, and we're not anti-Paramount or anti-Warner Brothers Discovery. A lot of these people owe their careers to these entities. And it's really about how do we keep moving forward together and making sure that the industry is viable and not extractive for those creative workers who are working within it. I mean, going back to what you were talking about earlier about people maybe thinking this only affects Hollywood, but in reality, this is a whole chain of workers that work around production and film screenings and all the way to the impact campaigns. And the television and movie sector is largely a small business economy. So when we're talking about this issue, it really is people across the nation who work in this film industry, and out of 122,000 plus companies, they're small businesses, and 92% of those are ones that have under 10 people working for them. And not to mention, every film that's made is a business. And so when we kind of start looking at the film and supply chain at those levels, I think we really needed those top level A-list celebrities to raise the awareness of this, because I think that they're very well aware of, you know, while their livelihoods are at stake, there's a lot more people who are working below the line or at these entities directly that have jobs on the line.
Yeah. And I just want to just follow up that, you know, media consolidation and issues of media consolidation is kind of central to having a democratic system. And that's kind of fundamental to the Future Film Coalition, is to make sure that there's a wide, diverse range of stories that are being told, and that also there are outlets for those diverse stories to be told. And when you start consolidating media power in the hands of a few, which is already happening, especially in hands of the few that cater to certain elements of the political spectrum, you run into problems. There's a great film called Democracy Noir about the rise of Orban in Hungary, which fortunately he was just kicked out of power. But it shows how he immediately consolidated media power into the hands of his friends, and how that limited what people were able to see over the next 16 years of being in power. And it really restricts the narrative over to a very small number of voices, or one voice being told, and being accessible to the wide public.
Mm-hmm. And on top of that, though, it is so interesting that at this moment, that if people who are afraid to just speak up for their livelihoods and their jobs, that signals such an issue. And also, one of the things we learned during this experience is it is prohibitively expensive for a state AG office to put forward a case. And I did not know when we started this, because we were following the model for the Kroger-Albertsons grocery store merger. They had launched a website that was called like nogrocerymerger.com. So that's why we made this website, blockthemerger.com. And actually, I learned to code just to make this website. And we learned later, after talking with lawyers and other teams, that it took over $32 million for the Washington State AG office to push back against the Albertson-Kroger merger. Now, when I think about that, and when I think that even the people who are defending the public don't even have enough money to push back against these large entities, that itself should signal a problem. We heard it would be millions for the state AGs to raise funds to hire the expert analysis needed to push back against this acquisition. So at that point, that's what makes this also so challenging and really hard for me to wrap my head around how this is even legal, for putting public defenders in a spot where they can't even have the allocations and the funding to do their job, because they also know that there's things inherently wrong about this merger. And it's not just about this particular merger or these two companies. It's the fact that there has been this long lineage of consolidation over the past few decades. And so really, one of the things with antitrust law is looking at the effects of cumulative consolidation and how that's affected the marketplace. And we really need four people to stand up and talk about that who work in the industry, because we know what happens when this happens. And this is kind of like where we're drawing the line.
And it's unfortunately, it's too bad we weren't around, you know, over the last 15 years, over multiple terrible mergers in media consolidation. Part of the reason we're in this situation with Warner Brothers Discovery is a series of mergers, you know, failed or flawed mergers that happened, you know, in their own history. One thing I do want to point out, while we're, you know, a voice for independent filmmakers, we also very quickly want to also be an advocate for audiences. And I think media consolidation is super important for audiences because, as you're already seeing, that fewer and fewer outlets for content mean that there's fewer and fewer choices for audiences, and that also prices go up. You could just look at the Netflix price increases lately, and your prices are being jacked up on consumers for less content and less diversity of content. And I think that one of the things we're pivoting to now in collecting stories for the Block the Merger campaign, and what would be helpful from your audience is that if your audience has stories about how they feel like they've been affected by media consolidation, meaning the kinds of films that are accessible to them, the prices that they're suffering from these price increases by these streaming conglomerates, that would be very helpful. Audiences can also go to blockthemerger.com and submit their own stories of how they've been affected by media consolidation, how they see media consolidation affecting them on a daily basis.
And I'll add to that.
Get Jax and I going. Sorry. And we're just
Go ahead, Jax.
So Mark Ruffalo, in his statement yesterday during Senator Cory Booker's hearing, which was probably the most epic hearing I've ever watched live. It was gripping. But one of the films that he mentioned was Holding Liat, and that was by these two American independent filmmakers, Lance and Brandon Kramer. And that was a film that was about after two of their relatives were kidnapped from their kibbutz in Israel. And that film was shortlisted for the 2026 Academy Awards. And it also won Best Documentary at Berlin. And they had approached over 30 streamers and distributors, and none of them took the film. And that was certainly because of the topic matter that was covered in this film. And I think that also just raises the awareness of the types of films that aren't making it up to the broad mainstream markets, covering important current issues in a factual way to raise up these diverse perspectives. So those are the things that's kind of the result on audiences as well, is that they're not able to learn more about what is actually happening in the world.
It's actually interesting. I actually consulted on that film, and I'm a filmmaker, but I'm also a distributor and I an advisor to films. And you see a fair amount of shadow banning going on now for political content. And the ruse that's given is that, oh, there's no audience for political content. But as we saw just recently, Steal the Story, Please, which is a documentary about Amy Goodman, $1,000 opening weekend box office at IFC Center, which is, I think, the biggest opening weekend box office for any film at IFC in the last 10 years, and is like one of the biggest opening weekend box office for a documentary, reading the last year.
And John, Lance wrote an article for IDA about the experience with Holding Liat, too, and They did so well in the theater circuit. Can you explain a little bit of why, even though something does well in the theater circuit, why that means we don't need places like the larger entities to take on these films? Because, you know, there's this question of
The thing is that
operate outside the system.
It's very hard. Oh, sorry. We're talking over each other, Sonny, which you asked us not to do. But so it's most theatrical experiences, except for a few unicorns out there, barely cover their expenses doing theatrical because theatrical is so expensive to perform. But it is still the one main way that you can get, you know, media awareness and to break through the media landscape with a film. So it's kind of necessary or perceived necessary still, but then you still need other income streams in order to help pay and recoup the money, the cost of making the film. So that's where the rub is that those ancillary, what are called ancillary markets, which are non-theatrical markets, have essentially dried up over the last 5 to 10 years. Well, 5 years, especially because of the dominance of the global streaming platforms and their business practices and their business model that's based on essentially shareholder growth. And that's, it's not based on audiences and what audiences want. It's not based on, you know, supporting interesting films. It's based on shareholder growth.
Let's, I want to loop back to something you highlighted that audiences can do, that the people listening to this can do. They can go to your website. They can upload their stories. They can tell you how consolidation has impacted their lives and their media consumption and what they have access to. And I think that's great. And I think it's important to have those stories out there. I'll say that I'll play devil's advocate here, because when I mentioned this letter to people, they're like, oh, a letter. Okay, well, what is that? What's that? What's a letter? That these folks are signing a letter. What does that actually mean? So let's talk about, like, actual, what are the actual concrete things that either filmmakers and actors and, you know, below the line folks who, you know, are the gaffers and the grips and the, you know, lighting crews. What are some concrete actions that can be taken to kind of push back against this, if any?
Jack, you want me to go, Jack? So, I mean, I think we're going to say the same thing, is that people who are in the film industry, whether they're gaffers, whatever, they can sign the letter as well. It's not just for A-listers, you know, it's for everyone within the industries. But more importantly, or equally important, they can go to blockthemerger.com and submit their story, especially below the line people who have been suffering from the effects of media consolidation over the last number of years, and, you know, how difficult it is to get work especially within California, within Hollywood, these days, that they can submit their stories. And the same thing with audiences, can also submit their stories.
I'll chime into this, because I think what I've learned from this is people are confusing an open letter with what a petition is. This open letter is not a petition. There is a petition that's going around, which I also encourage people to sign. That's through Free Press. That's also on the Block the Merger website. But the open letter raises that visibility. And the goal of this really is, we're at a critical moment right now where the Department of Justice needs to file a lawsuit in order to legally block this merger if these companies refuse to refuse to abandon it voluntarily, right? And we know how our federal DOJ is working right now based on what has happened in the past. So that leaves it to the states. That leaves it to our amazing state AG offices. We're in a critical moment where they are investigating actively whether or not to push forward with a suit. And that, as I mentioned earlier, takes a lot of money. And they have to be spot on in understanding that there is a case here to be made. And so part of this letter is really about putting pressure on the state AG offices to feel confident in putting forward a lawsuit, because that needs to happen. And if we miss this moment, we don't miss the moment just to block the merger. And if we miss the moment also to make any types of settlements or consent agreements if a merger is not blocked, this is that window. And in order for any of those settlements or consent agreements to be made, they need to understand what the impact is of people in the industry from all the different types of markets and all the different layers of this film and media supply chain. So one of the things that has really been uncovered is the unique effects that this has on the independent film industry in terms of monopsony harm, which is something that was coming up in the Penguin and Simon and Schuster case. Mm-hmm. And monopsony is exactly what we're seeing, what John explained with what we're seeing in that, like, buyer licensing frame. So our goal through Block the Merger .com is to collect enough testimonials of people who have been harmed by media consolidation, not just from this merger or speculating, but actual harms that have been taking place over the past few decades to their role in the ecosystem. So that way, when we get to the point of doing settlements or consent agreements, which I will say is not what we're going to, that is not what we're aiming for. But should it be that mm-hmm. next level, we'll have something to outline what those impacts are, because right now we have unions collecting that information and guilds, but a lot of those unions and guilds don't protect the independent filmmakers that we represent. And sometimes there's conflicting viewpoints on how that's done. So that's why it's really important to be collecting that.
One last
thing people can do is they can also call their state AG offices and encourage their attorney generals to take action.
Well, let's give folks some actual, because look, I live in Texas. My state AG is Ken Paxton. He's probably not going to do anything about this. But, you know, if you live in California, you've got Rob Bonta. He's already on top of it. Who are some of the other state AGs that would potentially be open to partaking in this suit? Do you guys have some names you want to throw out there? Some states where folks live that they can get in touch with people?
Colorado, New York, Washington, John.
Illinois.
Okay. All right.
That was a
Yeah, there. I'm trying to point folks in a more, you know, direct their energy, right? I want to. Jack, you mentioned something, and I realize that this
actually,
is not the
Sunny.
Yeah,
mind if I interrupt?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just thinking another. Well, the thing is, it's really useful for them to reach out to their state AGs on their own, but while we're collecting these stories, we're also collecting their states, their congressional districts, and we are actively going to be sharing information to state AGs as a group, right? And this is all done confidentially. So anyone who is feeling maybe hesitant, we have a process where they can fill out that form, put in the different types of consents, and whether or not they would be open to be talking to regulators about their experiences. That is the key action, and it doesn't matter what state you're in, because we'll be working to collect and categorize and identify prospects for the state AGs if they want to reach out and talk to these people more. And our goal, because for me, I don't work directly in the industry, but I want our organization to be a cover for people who have these concerns, so we can be that voice for them. Again, I'll just stress it could be anyone from any state, and we'll be helping reroute that through various channels, confidentially and anonymously.
That sounds good. Sounds good. Let me to go back to one other thing, Jax, that you had mentioned, the consent agreements. I realize that the goal here is not a settlement or a consent agreement. It's to block it. But if it is not blockable, let us say, what sort of concessions are folks hoping for to help maintain a greater balance of competition and access to distribution, both for audiences and for filmmakers?
There's various things that could get baked in, let's say if it gets to this point. But one of the things I want to say is, in the past, historically, consent agreements are not enforceable in a very easy way. So oftentimes those look good on paper, but they have no long-term benefit. That's why we don't start with settlements, just wanting to put that out there for people so they understand. But second, something that could be really useful is having a certain percentage of independent, non-studio backed films to be acquired, and also having them keep certain amounts of IP ownership. John, do you want to talk a little bit about this and how it might relate to some of the work we've done with the film incentives?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, one of the things which is, you know, might be just one of the things that we like to do at Future Film Coalition is also imagine what a possible future might be, and so that we're not constantly fighting against things that are encroaching or making things more difficult. And one thing that's been raised multiple times is a form of national film board and national film credit that many other countries have, you know, around the world. And one of the reasons that you see so many Oscar contenders coming from foreign countries is because those films are supported by their national governments. There's funds. There's also, which are funded sometimes through taxes on the streamers, sometimes funded through, you know, because those governments support the arts. So having some form of national film board and national film tax credit that would benefit independent production would be, you know, for me, a great place to start and something that's been raised multiple times.
Yeah. Adding on to that, you know, Film USA is another service organization that is working to serve the United States film commissioners. And one of the things that they've uncovered, well, not really uncovered, but one of their talking points is out of the 100 production heavy countries in the world, we're the only one without a federal film office. So just backing up what John's saying, it is really interesting that we don't have one here. And we've often relied on entities like nonprofit entities and independent financers I used to work at the National Endowment for the Arts up until last year when we got dozed, all of our program officers. I was the film and media arts director at the NEA. And I will say it's hard for people who work in the film field independently to get the funding to make a film when it's very apparent that you're not going to be making that money back later on down the line. Most of the time at the NEA, my work was around trying to raise visibility about this. But having a film office would be transformational. Also having digital streaming platform taxes, that would be transformational. And this relates to things like what happened with The Angler, with Richard Rushfield bringing those buttons to CinemaCon and Paramount pulling those ads. Right now, because the way media works and where the advertising money is flowing, it's not where it used to be. So we need to just re-transform the systems that supported all of that middle and lower forms of production, and also think about cable, streaming, and digital content as one sphere in the media world. And I'm working at the Shorenstein Center on a project that's really thinking about how we rethink funding for public media infrastructure. And I know public media also has a certain connotation and has like, what does that have to do with Hollywood? But in a way, these films that we're talking about, like Union or Holding Liat, these are films that would be supported through that nonprofit side that is part of the arts and cultural sector. And so we really need to think about how we look at this ecosystem as a whole.
The other thing is like returning to some of, or at least the ideas of some of the regulations that used to exist in the past, like the FinCEN regulation and the Paramount consent decrees. You know, currently these global streaming platforms are vertically integrated where they control production, they control distribution. And that didn't used to be the case. The Paramount consent decree, which itself was a consent decree, prevented vertical integration. And that's been dismantled since it started being dismantled, I think, during Reagan, maybe even during Carter, you know, many years ago. And then FinCEN kind of like has been, you know, eliminated over the last 20 years. And what it means is that when you allow these five companies to control all aspects of production and distribution, you're consolidating a lot of power into those hands, but also Xing out the ability for independent producers to own their IP and to earn revenue off of, you know, multiple income streams from their products. And that would go a long way to also creating a more thriving independent movie sector.
And a while back, there used to be more specialty film divisions. And a lot of those have closed in the past few decades. And those were really essential for people working in the independent film field. And so like with Miramax, you know, after Disney acquired it, it stopped operating as an independent buyer around 2010. And there's kind of like this trickle effect. John, do you want to chime in on that too? Of just like that role of the specialty divisions and how those, while they don't exist anymore, but we need that to come back as well.
Yeah. I mean, those were relatively large buyers of independent film product. And as these companies consolidated, they have been essentially eliminated.
Let's give folks some examples of these, because we were talking about, you know, like Miramax gets bought by Disney, but then there's, you know, Focus at Universal, which is still there, but is really kind of bigger than it used to be, I think, or focusing on bigger, more expensive movies. But what are some other examples of these specialty labels that have kind of been swallowed up over the last few years?
Well, I think it's almost less the specialty labels than the independent distributors that have kind of like, you know, ceased to exist because they can't, you know, kind of survive as much anymore. I mean, there used to be a bit of a plethora of buyers out there, and now, you know, there's Magnolia, Neon, A24. There are some upstarts that are starting up, but they don't have, you know, there isn't the income streams that the others used to have.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always been, look, and let's be frank here. It's always been hard in the independent sector, right? Like this has always been tough. That's always been a hard thing, but it has gotten harder as a result of so much of what we are seeing here, like what we are seeing kind of crystallized here, but what has happened over the last, you know, 5, 10, 20 years.
Yeah, one of the things we have in the statement we submitted for the hearing yesterday and also for the spotlight hearing the other week in Burbank for Senator Schiff is around the 90s and 2000s, filmmakers might have maybe 10 or a dozen options for viable bidders for their films. And with that, a company could just write a check or release the film theatrically and market it to audiences. But most of those don't exist as independent buyers anymore because they were absorbed by larger studios, which then closed them or redirected their activity towards franchise content. And so that's another thing that is an added layer to this is these larger studios will just be prioritizing the IP that they already have and doing the rehashed version of X, Y, and Z versus putting that money towards something that might not be tested.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was everything I wanted to ask you guys. I always like to try and close these interviews by asking if there's anything I should have asked. If what should folks know about either this letter or the Future Film Coalition that we did not discuss here today?
Neil Jax, you want to start? No. Yeah, I mean, I think what we're really excited about is like we're a very young organization and, you know, our goal is to create a thriving ecosystem for independent film that's not only benefits independent filmmakers, but also audiences and gives, you know, a greater diversity of content and choice. And, you know, while this Block the Merger campaign is probably our first major initiative, we were also involved with making sure that the California tax incentive had a carve out for independent film. And we are focusing on other state tax incentives to make those more favorable for independent film. And what we want to make sure is that, you know, what hasn't existed for 20 to 30 years is any advocate for independent film in general and a lack of knowledge about what independent film is and what makes it sustainable and why people kind of like enjoy independent film and want to support independent film, like why it's essential. And so blocking this merger is one component of that, but finding a variety of ways to support independent film on a policy level is essentially our main mission. And we're just getting started. We have another thing that maybe is worth mentioning is that we're composed of six branches. So we're composed of filmmakers, we're composed of artist support organizations, a third branch is distributors, a fourth branch are exhibitors, so theaters and film festivals. A fifth branch is media and communications, so people involved with marketing. And then a sixth branch is called the at-large branch, but involves funders, lawyers, academics, film commissions, et cetera. And the goal of that is for each of these branches to bubble up ideas, pain points that they're experiencing within the independent film ecosystem, and then offering what their solutions, thinking of what their solutions might be, and then coming together to advocate for those solutions. So it's not just an organization seeking to create policy changes, but it's also seeking to know and understand what those various policy changes might be and to be very creative about that. And so in currently we're faced with this urgent issue of the merger of Paramount and Warner Brothers, but over the next years we'll be, you know, working with a variety of different proposals, such as the National Film Board is one of the ideas that we've been thinking of, to find some solution to create benefits for independent media makers, for the workers that work in the independent media space, for all the businesses, small businesses that benefit from independent media creation. And they're one of the things that we're working on is to create a study, an economic study showing how much independent media puts into the economy every year. And that study's never existed before, so that we can prove that this sector is actually a very significant sector of the U.S. economy and deserves some sort of support, and just like every other sector in our economy.
Yeah, and I just want to chime in on that. Our board members also span the whole industry in a way of like from their experience, right? So Carrie Putnam, who was the former CEO of Sundance, we have Jeff Kasumahinti of Antidote Films, Abby Sun from International Documentary Association, Barbara Twist, who used to be the executive director of Film Festival Alliance, and Brian Newman of Subgenre, Sanjay Sharma from Marginal Media Works. So we have a lot of notable people who came together just to co-found Future Film Coalition. And we just launched our website the other day at the same time of this this open letter. So people can go to futurefilmcoalition.org and learn more about us and see where they can join. Joining is free. And we do have various eligibility criteria for each one of the branches, just so we can ensure that our actions and our issues that we're working towards are informed by people working in the industry. But right now we do have all of that on our website if people are interested to learn more about that. And we're also looking for more partnerships and affiliates. So if anyone's looking to partner up to help strengthen the independent film industry in their states, we would love to hear from them.
That's all great. And again, the website is futurefilmcoalition.org. Go check it out. You guys have a Substack that is full of, you know, interesting little things. John, you have a Substack as well. Do you want to, what's your...
Yeah, my Substack is John Reese 8 Above. I mainly talk about film distribution and marketing for independent film.
Yeah, so go check them out. I'll link to them in the post that goes with this podcast. So you can check them all out. But John, Jax, thanks for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Great, thanks, Sonny. Really appreciate it.
And again, my name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark, and we'll be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. We'll see you guys then.
Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.